6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/listen. That's forhers.com/listen. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
Care Talk with Laura Packard is a podcast covering healthcare in America from a progressive perspective. Our healthcare system is broken, and we all know insurance companies are out of control. If you don't have health insurance or don't understand the differences between insurance plans or have surprise medical bills, out-of-control prescription drug costs, or can't get the care you need, listen to Care Talk with Laura Packard weekly on Tuesdays. What's going to happen to your healthcare under the Trump administration? From prescription drug prices to health insurance costs, from healthcare for seniors and people with disabilities to reproductive care, from care for veterans to public health, including vaccinations. Healthcare experts answer your questions every week, and they go in-depth on Medicare, Medicaid, the Affordable Care Act, private insurance, and more. Go to healthcarevoices.org/caretalk or search for Care Talk with Laura Packard on your favorite podcast app to listen today.
Welcome to the Start Me Up podcast, part of MSW Media and the Sexy Liberal Podcast Network. I'm your host, Kimberly Johnson in DC. Today, my returning guest is Sherry Jacobus. We may touch on a little bit of the political, but mostly we're going to concentrate on fun. I have a bunch of fun questions for Sherry, but before we get into it, the Start Me Up podcast is independent, listener-funded, and woman-run. Visit patreon.com/startmeup to see the variety of tiers offered, including the option to get a bonus What's Up episode just for patrons every Tuesday. It's kind of like my online journal where I get a little more personal and I talk about whatever's on my mind. There's also an ad-free tier with a much shorter intro. Just visit patreon.com/startmeup. Now please enjoy my conversation with Sherry Jacobus. Welcome back to the show, Sherry.
Thanks. It's great to be here. We do this every now and again, don't we? Different
yes,
formats.
We do.
And we sometimes forget what we talk about offline and online, and it gets
exactly.
Interesting.
I know. Well, we are talkers, so we can talk. I mean, we do it for a living, so it's a good thing we're talkers. But I've got a bunch of, just FYI, I've got a bunch of random fun questions for you. I don't really like talking about politics. I post about politics, but I can't fucking do all of it, right? I can't talk about it and post about it. I just can't. So I'm kind of like, occasionally, I know maybe politics will come up in this conversation, but, and you know, future shows, all that good stuff. Some shows are going to be more political, but I'm kind of just wanting to have fun and give people a break. So you've got a big audience. Lots of people know who you are. And of course, my audience knows who you are. And so I just thought I wanted to ask you some fun questions.
Okay.
And, you know, like get to know Sherry a little bit outside of the political arena. But before we get into all those questions, I just want to say, what's new with you?
I have spent the last many years, more than I wanted to, in my little hometown of Hagerstown, Maryland. There was family stuff, and then there was the pandemic, and then I had cancer. It was all the Trump stuff, and I kind of got stuck here, but also kind of liked it because I was reconnecting with my old gal pals from high school, cheerleaders, and you know, we were all cheerleaders together a million years ago. And now I am moving to D.C. Back to D.C. I was there 30 years. I haven't lived there in 12 years. I was in New York for a few years. And I closed on a place a couple weeks ago. I'm doing the slow roll move. So right now, my place here is just in complete disarray. And that's what's going on in my life. I am moving back to D.C., back to the belly of the beast. Maybe there'll be some good trouble to get into or cause. So I got a lot going on in that regard.
Okay. Well, it's not even political, but it's kind of tied to politics. Right before the show, you and I were discussing the idea of Social Security, whether or not they're going to take away. And I just want you to tell people what you told me. And I know that nobody's going to be like, it's all just unfolding. Nobody's making any predictions here that we know for sure. But I just want you to tell me what you told me about Social Security.
Well, okay. Well, that means I have to give my age. I am 65. I just started drawing Social Security a few months ago. I actually not right as soon as I turned 65, like wait, like a month, I messed up. And I'm thinking, one reason I did it a couple of years earlier than I thought maybe I was going to was because I wanted to get in case they started screwing around with people getting in new and not letting us. And I thought, well, this way I could be grandfathered in. Mm-hmm. So that seemed like you get a little bit less money, but you know, and right. Then you make a certain amount and they take half of it, but at least I was in, and that made me feel safer. And these days I'm all about personal security, not being rich, not anything lavish, but being okay, being mm-hmm. safe. Mm-hmm. And I'm really, really hung up on that now, in the era of Trump. I need to be safe. I need mm-hmm. to feel secure. And so that was my calculation. And I'm thinking too, that they are not going to cut us. They're not going to take away Social Security from people who are already in the system. That's what I'm guessing. Mm-hmm. And things get really bad and Trump is really successful in being a complete dictator. And that's the way he controls the society and kills off old people. Then that will happen. I know we weren't talking about politics, but I'll just, you know,
it's okay.
but you know, during the pandemic, there was like, I don't know how many hundreds of, you know, billions of dollars saved in Social Security because old people were dying of COVID, and that's how they achieved their savings. And I think that is the impetus behind a lot of what they're doing. They want old and sick people to die early. They don't want to take care of it, and that's literally it's savings by attrition.
Wow.
But I'm calculating that if you're getting Social Security, I think if you're not getting direct deposit, you're nuts. Mm-hmm. Because, they're not mailing out the checks. Just make it as easy on them as possible
right.
to not screw you over. so that's my calculation and the reason that I decided to draw a little bit early. Again, even if it gets taxed to the hilt, I think the second half, what you make is taxed 85% if you make over a certain amount of money. But I'm in the system. And to me, that felt safer.
Interesting. Well, and you know, I mean, part of the reason I asked you this is because the next question I'm going to ask you has to do with self-care. And I'm bringing this up because one of the things that I do for self-care, and I know some people are probably going to roll their eyes at me, but that's okay. there's this woman that I listen to on YouTube. And now I don't listen to her for this reason, but she claims that she's psychic. I say claims and I'm not saying she is or she isn't. And frankly, the psychic part is not what I care about. She talks about politics, and then she also talks about the fact that she's bipolar and has learned how to deal with it and how to get to neutrality when she feels that she's spinning out and all the stuff. And she's really very articulate. She knows what she's talking about when she's talking about politics. And so The other day, she mentioned that she was very triggered by what was happening in the news. And it was the story of RFK, you know, tracking people with autism. And I believe she has a child who's autistic. So this just freaked her out. And
it's not a disease like COVID.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And so, but it was very upsetting to her and she got triggered by it and she started panicking and she's like, okay, wait a minute. And she's like, what do I teach people to do? Like, you know, take a few breaths. And she said, you know, I went and I researched it and I realized, okay, nothing has happened. This is just a suggestion. And, you know, I mean, she was just basically talking about how she went from a panicked feeling to feeling like, okay, I can breathe. Not to say that, oh, everything's just hunky-dory, you know, not living in a delusion, but not freaking out over something that has not yet happened. It's just a suggestion. So I am living that every day. I'm not as worried about my own Social Security because if something were to happen and they take it away, well, I'm just going to have to deal with it and I'm not collecting it now. I'm worried for my mother more than anybody. But I just, you know, I'm taking that woman's advice where it's like, okay, I'm not going to completely freak out because they're going to try to scare us. They're saying things to us and they're putting things out there that haven't yet happened. So that's why I wanted to bring up the Social Security, because I know a lot of people are nervous, and I'm not saying that you don't have any, you know, right to feel nervous. We're all nervous, but I think we have to just keep in mind, let's not panic and freak out unless, you know, I don't want to say that we should panic and freak out, but don't react to something that hasn't happened yet because you don't know which way it's going to go. And I think that's one of the things.
The blowback would be incredible. It would to be Republicans insane. In Congress. And so Republicans in Congress, the whole political strategy needs to be. And by the way I unplug from all of this, and I've started doing it after a certain time at night, I stay
that's
off
smart.
The internet at all. I started, you know, I take a gummy and I watch, you know, binge on TV. And I wasn't doing that a lot, but I kind of feel like, I'll get to what I was going to say in a minute. But this is how I feel. You know what I went through and what Trump did to me starting in 2015. It was such a bizarre story. I would wake up every morning and not even be able to believe this was happening to me. The catfishing and the hacking and the being told late at night, Trump has guys in Queens that might be on the way to get you. He got me kicked off TV. This incredible drumbeat of horrible, bizarre things that you don't run into in politics. And I'd done tough politics for years. I feel now like I feel vindicated because now everybody knows I was telling the truth. I was the canary in the coal mine. And I think the way I'm able to log off after a certain time of night is that I think, okay, the rest of the world now knows what I've known since 2015, early 2016. I don't have to do this all night. I can go watch a movie. I can go, you know, hang out with friends. Mm-hmm. I can go for a walk or a run because I feel like I'm like everybody, I'm not in this alone anymore.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That makes sense.
Yeah, that totally makes sense. And, you know,
other people carry some of the load. I'm still doing my work. I mean, I've got my podcast. I do my YouTubes. I'm online. I do shows. I do all of that. I write sometimes, but I can turn it off now for a few hours.
So, okay. That's kind of what you're doing for self-care. Anything else?
I told you I got the move. I started concentrating on things. You know, I had cancer, and you and Joe Walsh started that GoFundMe for me, which saved my life. And the doctors at Johns Hopkins saved my life because of the pandemic. There were some things happening the year before, and they put everything up because COVID hit. So it took a year then to go back to the doctor and get diagnosed. And by this time, it was stage 3. It had spread to the lymph nodes. So it was a rough treatment and rough recovery, real rough that first year. And certain things are permanent. Mm-hmm. So my self-care is I eat better now. Sometimes in order to get healthy, sometimes you have to get sick, really sick.
Yeah.
And which is a weird thing to say, but I love being outdoors and walking. I mean, I do my workouts and I'll go running and everything, but sometimes I just like walking and being outdoors. Being outdoors helps me. I started listening to music again. Kimberly, I don't remember when I stopped listening to music. Maybe I used to in the car. I don't know. And so I do things like I take gummies now, which I started doing when I was doing chemo. I did some vaping. I don't like foreign stuff in my lungs now. So I do the sleep gummies, and I found out that what I've discovered is there's a lot of upscale people my age and older. I'm thinking of a particular couple, well-to-do, successful in real estate. lovely people. Early 70s, they were so distraught when Trump won on election. I remember getting a message saying, "Oh, we're sitting here. We just, you know, we're having a glass of red wine and a gummy," and they're in their 70s and they're very healthy. Well, but you know what? You know, the reason I think older people like to do this, you get over this notion that, oh my God, is the gateway drug to LSD, you're shooting heroin.
Which I never had that, but
that's what people think. And so it takes a while, but so I don't think that people of a certain age like the vaping. They're more about health. If you're going to be in mm-hmm. your 70s and 60s, your health to a large degree is a choice. Mm-hmm. I mean, because bad things are going to happen anyway as you get older, but you can fight it off if you're generally healthy and you just look better, feel better, and have mm-hmm. a happier life. You know, you can live like people used to live in their 40s and 50s when you're in your 70s. But you don't want to do vaping for two reasons. You don't want foreign stuff in your lungs, but also you don't know when to stop. You just keep vaping. Like when I was in treatment with chemo, if things got bad, the vaping took the edge off real quick, where the gummies mm-hmm. and edibles took a while to kick in. And so with the edibles, it's a finite dosage. Mm-hmm. Like if you want something to relax, I actually do them so to help me sleep. Mm-hmm. They don't put you to sleep, but they relax you. So yes, you can sleep. And so that's what I think people are doing. It's safe. You're not, because vaping is like having a big open bottle of wine in front of you. A gummy, you know, you take just one, it's a mm-hmm. finite dosage, and it's like having, okay, this is my half a glass of wine a night or something mm-hmm. like that. And that's, you know, as you get older, you really, your health has a lot to do with your appearance mm-hmm. And how you feel and how productive you are. And if you're, you know, it's a choice. And so you work it into your lifestyle. And so people who, if you spent your whole life doing some kinds of sports and activities, you're probably always going to want to get on a bike or at least go for a walk, even if it's not like a full on workout. You know, you're going to be the person at the beach that you're not just going to sit on the beach. You're going to go in and swim and ride the waves. Mm-hmm. So that's what I do gummies and I exercise and I hang out with my friends. Yeah.
You know, I can't do gummies because I have such a sensitive system that it makes me feel incredibly groggy the next day. I can't do it. So
wrong ones. There's so many different kinds.
I know. Maybe I should play around with it. But I mean, it's so funny, the whole idea of a gateway drug, because, you know, when I grew up in Southern California, I got some stories. And, you know, I mean, I did, I won't go into the whole mushroom story, but I did mushrooms in my senior year. My mother had told me, she's like, you know, she's kind of one of these mothers. She was a single mother and she always just laid it out there for me. And she said, okay, I don't want you to go do drugs, but if you're going to do drugs, please do them here. I don't want you to be outside of the house. And did I listen to her? No. So we were all, my girlfriends and I were going to go to, we lived in Torrance, which was a beach town. And we were going to go to Hollywood to see the Led Zeppelin at the Laserium at the Griffith Park Observatory. And I took mushrooms and I wound up in Hollywood Presbyterian. And it was just this hallucinogenics and me do not go together. So it was not fun. And my poor mom had to come pick me up and it was like an hour drive and it was her only day off. And it was so funny because when I, you know, I had asked everybody to call her before I had gone to the hospital. And as we were going to the hospital, I said, did you call my mother? And they said, no. And I said, let me call her. And so I called her. I'm like, did anyone get in touch with you? And she was like really tired. And she was watching Falcon and the Snowman. For those of you who don't know, it's a drug movie. And so I'm like, I said to her, well, you're going to be mad at me. And she's like, what? Cause she knew I was in Hollywood and she just figured maybe she was going to have to come pick me up or something. And I go, well, I'm on shrooms. Here's the paramedic. She comes to pick me up and I'm like in this room all by myself. And I, as soon as I saw her, I just completely broke down and I started crying. And she just like, I'm not going to punish you. I think you punished yourself. The whole point of this was like, I had tried other drugs. Like I tried uppers. I tried downers once. Like once I tried an upper, I tried a downer and I hated it. And then I tried cocaine because cocaine was everywhere in the 80s. And I was mm-hmm. living in a beach town where it was just everywhere. And so I had tried it a number of times and I don't know how many times, but like, you know, 10. And each time I did it, I liked it less until the very last time I did it. And this was over a very long, like for me, it was a long period because I was a young person, but you know, I was like 18 years old. And so maybe over the course of 2 years, I did it 10 times. And the last time that I did it, I was just like, I hate this. I feel like I've taken poison. And I just, you know, so I tried these drugs sometimes, maybe even like not so much before, I guess, marijuana, but still it wasn't like a gateway, because some of the, it was like, no, I hate them.
A lot of it was the culture that made it gateway.
It was the drug culture. More than the drug.
But the cannabis has survived all of that, so that now we found out it's useful when you're sick. And I would not be doing gummies now had I not been doing the heavier medicinal ones, medical cannabis when I was sick. And then all of it became legal in my state. I didn't even know that for a while. And I sometimes in my first year after, because I, the effects of all the chemo radiation, it's like there'd be little surprises throughout that first year. And it was really depressing because I thought, am I ever going to get better? Or is this how I'm going to feel? So a lot of it took work, diet, yoga, physical therapy, staying hydrated, just the whole nine yards.
Yeah.
And it made a difference. So I've adopted a lot of that as a lifestyle because I liked it, that made me look better and feel better. But like weird things, my hair fell out several months after I ended treatment. I noticed it coming out in the front, like getting bald in the front, but then it was everywhere. And I have thin hair anyway. Or at least hair, I can't afford to lose that, but I'd be in the shower and I'd feel like I noticed that, like, there was water up around my ankles, and I looked down, and like, it's because the drain was clogged with hair. And so my oncologist, my radiology oncologist, we called him Dr. Dreamy. he was so good looking. Yeah. But at Johns Hopkins, I stayed at the Johns Hopkins Residence Inn for 6.5 weeks, and I had friends, and that was paid for because of the GoFundMe. I could not have afforded to be treated at Johns Hopkins because it was outpatient. I was taking chemo every day, oral chemo, plus two other big injections, like from a turkey baster thing twice during treatment. But the radiation is where the artistry is. And so that's why I had to be there, but I had to go there every day. And so they have a Johns Hopkins Residence Inn where it's like literally a 5-10 minute walk to where treatment was. So every day. So I had my gal pals, they took turns staying with me. They liked the edibles, by the way, because it helped them sleep. they would go with me. The point is, Dr. Dreamy, he was so cute. But when I explained the hair loss, when I would go back, because you have to go back all the time, less and less now, but then it was like I was all there all the time, every few weeks. And I said, my hair is falling out because treatment ended in June, mid June. And then in October, it's like, he goes, well, that shouldn't be happening. I'm like, oh shit. I thought he was gonna know this stuff.
Right.
I'm like, I don't know. Maybe it's because we found out when you get sick, they do the PET scans, they find everything. Anyway, I had hypothyroidism. We found that out, and a nodule in the thyroid. And he goes, well, probably not. He says, look, we don't know. It affects everybody differently because you got pumped full of a lot of chemo and radiation. Basically what they do is they bring you to the brink of death and then bring you back.
Wow.
And my white blood cell count was just in the toilet. And if it had dropped too low past a certain point, anytime during treatment, they stop everything and they hospitalize you for a week and then hopefully they can start up again. Well, mine was getting low, but it wasn't until my second to the last day. And then they started calling me. I didn't have my phone. Like, don't take it. If I took my chemo that evening, I would die. And it was really, really bad. And they have the number of one of my friends, so they didn't know who to call. And they said, stop everything. And they said, the radiation is doing most of the heavy lifting, so we're going to complete the radiation. We're not going to hospitalize you. We're just going to send you home. But it's really intense stuff. And so the recovery of that, I mean, you and I were talking a lot in that first year. There's lots of ups and downs. It's like whenever you go through anything like that. And this was on top of family stuff and the pandemic and all the Trump stuff that happened to me and then that happened in general to the country. So it was, your physical health is when you're in that situation, you really have to pay attention to your mental health and seek out people who kind of get it. And if you're around the wrong people, it can really be damaging to you. My family was not very good at all. I think a lot of it, if I've developed any good habits to learn how to kind of unwind, I think it comes literally from being sick and being forced to. And otherwise, I'm not somebody, for all these years during the era of Trump, I've not been able to get offline. And I get on there and then I'm on Twitter and then I start responding. It's like a you can't help yourself.
I know.
You know, you can't just, yeah. Like, what am I going to miss? Or something's going to happen. And I don't have to do that anymore because everybody else is on the case now because they understand
exactly.
what I've known for nine
That's kind of, yeah. And that's
years.
Kind of how I'm feeling because, you know, I'm very, 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 very small potatoes in all of this. And I don't
care.
No,
you're impactful. You have a voice.
I know that
important.
we all make our own, I mean, we all have varying degrees of where we have influence, and I'm not trying to put myself down in any way, but I just, when I, you know, after the election, I was so mentally devastated, and I just felt like, what am I even doing this for? What difference does it make? Plus I was wrong because I was like so up, you know, like so up about it, thinking that she was going to win big. And then we saw what happened. So now I'm just kind of on this thing where I'm not exactly sure, you know, what happens. Okay. Let's just say, you know, we save democracy, which I definitely think there is hope. Oh, let me just share this little hopeful thing. You know, Rachel Bitticoffer was so filled with doom after the election. And she's like, that's it, everybody. America's over. There's never going to be any free and fair elections. And, you know, I mean, my mother would say things like that. And I was thinking the same thing. And the other day, Rachel Bitticoffer basically said, you know, when I first came onto the scene in 2018, when nobody knew who I was, I predicted that the midterms, Democrats were going to pick up at least 40 seats. Now she's saying that she's seeing that for 2026, but even more. And the fact that she's even saying it at all is such a big deal to me because she's been telling us that she doesn't think there's going to be fair elections. And now she's like, hey, we're going to fucking win big. So I don't exactly know what has
shifted. But I think if there are fair elections, we will win big.
Oh, I believe.
I
believe
concerns.
We will too.
Well, and you know, here's
if there
what
are
gonna
free and fair elections.
what is going to? I thought we weren't going to be talking politics.
But I just threw that in there.
But you know, I think that here's the hardcore truth. It's going to have to be Republicans who save us at this point.
Yes, they will.
That means that we have to, and they have to be more afraid of us, of their constituents, of voters, mm-hmm. than they are of Trump. Mm-hmm. And unless they have assurances that Starlink and Trump and Putin can get them all reelected, we've seen this happen. Mitch McConnell, he's just trying to get in heaven and undo what he did. We've got Lisa Murkowski, and Susan Collins has grown a little bit of a spine, and then Rand Paul, that he's a weirdo. All we need is a few. All we need is a few.
All we
House,
need is
too.
A few.
And
I'm
when
feeling
they start,
good about it.
Well, see, they go back home or they start hearing from constituents. When they start hearing from their donor base, and these are not the millionaire oligarch people. These are donor bases for House and Senate races. They're not the ones benefiting. You mm-hmm. know, Trump puts out a tariff or puts out some regulation, and the gazillionaires and other countries just have to bribe him, mm-hmm. you know, buy the meme coin and do all that. They just have to bribe him. That's how he's becoming an oligarch. They pay him, and then they get an exemption. Well, regular millionaires don't really get that. They're not big enough. So they're going to go to their senators and their House members, and they're going to raise holy hell. These are not cultists. This is the economic voters. These are the people who said, I think Trump's going to be better for my pocketbook. And that's all they cared about, Kimberly, that said. So when they realize that their 401k and their investments and their businesses now because of tariffs are going to be shot, or, you know, are we seriously getting rid of Social Security or hurting it? Or is, you know, people. And so those are the people that make themselves known to their Republican House and Senate members and get listened to as the rest of us when we do these protests. When I did my little local protest earlier in the month here in my little town, you know, I went there with my gal pals. We saw everybody. I saw people who a few years ago, I couldn't have even told you what their politics were. Or maybe they used to kind of be MAGA and then they got real quiet after 2016 down there with signs. These are not activists. These are like housewives, you know, in a small town. You know, they've raised their kids. And I remember like, I was like, Sally, you're here. I didn't even know she, I didn't know. I thought she was Republican. I didn't know. Yeah. You see them on Facebook and they don't say, I figure if people are silent on Facebook about politics, they're probably MAGA. I don't know. And I was shocked. And she's there with her homemade sign down in our little town square. And so that made me think, okay, there's something happening here. Because when you have apolitical people who have never been activists, they don't work, you know, this is just not what they do. When they start showing up, like the nice little white girl, you know, housewives in small towns in a red state,
Well, you know what? It kind of goes back to what you were saying about being sometimes being sick is the road to health. And I think, you know, none of us wanted all of this to burn down, but it's burning down. And usually what, I mean, I posted the other day, the tower card, which
I don't even, analogy.
I don't even follow. I don't like follow tarot or anything like that, but I do know of the Tower card. And the Tower card is supposed to basically, like, everything falls apart. But what it's doing is it's getting rid of everything to make way for the new. And since we have been forced into this situation, it is not we would have chosen Kamala, but this happened. So, my mother, who I talk to every single day, seems to be under the impression that, you know, if we can get through this, we're going to see huge sweeping changes. Perhaps we will see Medicare for all. There, you know, not everything is going to be perfect, but there's a possibility that the Constitution could be rewritten. Will it be? I don't know. But it opens those doors where before, you know, certain things were just not going to change. Now this is creating change. So when, you know, I'm trying to remember these things, I'm trying to remember bigger picture things, and I'm trying not to get panicked every time I see something, because it's very easy to get panicked and triggered. Mostly I worry for my mother, but I worry for myself because, you know, just like you have a big mouth, you're saying it out there. Bob has a big mouth. You know, all these people that I know, I mean, obviously all my friend group are political big mouths. So I worry for all of us. You know, I mean, we're out there saying this stuff. And, you know, I saw Axios did a thing the other day saying that the Trump administration is trying, or I should say regime, is trying to look and see how they can just get anybody and deport anybody. And I sent it to Bob, and he's like, well, and this is exactly what I was pointing out with this woman who said she got triggered by the thing with autism. When she started researching it, she recognized, okay, nothing's been done, blah, 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 so let's not panic. And so Bob had looked up the article, and he's like, well, Seb Gorka said that. So right now, it's just it's not to say that they're never going to do that, but it's not happening right now. So it's like, all right, just calm down.
Well, and some of this stuff, you know, as a former Republican working on Capitol Hill, as a leadership staffer, I did all of that stuff. I was there in Newt's office for meetings several times a week. And I knew all these people. I know that the early genesis of some of this stuff, when it wasn't evil, except when they went too far, they really did want to cut waste and fraud out of a bloated government. But there's a way to do it, Kimberly, and mm-hmm. it's not to have Elon Musk come in with these Doge incels. And you notice they can't really say what the waste and fraud is, and there's no arrests. But what we did is part of our oversight function. Every authorizing committee in the House and Senate, you have every authorizing committee has an oversight subcommittee, and that is their role. And that is what Republicans and leadership should be doing, mm-hmm. is having those staffers. You go through line by line all the different programs within the agencies over which your authorizing committee has jurisdiction. And then Republicans and Democrats can fight over something as wasteful. Should it be cut? No, we still need that. But those are why you have the hearings.
We found
760 like federal education programs that seemed wasteful or duplicative, as some were in other agencies. It wasn't even within the Department of Education. And we did this project because the far right wing at that point, remember, Newt had to put together a coalition to win the majority, the first Republican majority in 40 years or whatever. And part of that coalition was the Christian right. And all of a sudden they had a seat at the table. It was so awkward for me to be in these meetings with Ginny Thomas, because like, what is she doing here? But they, of course, you know, I guess they had promised that they would eliminate the Department of Education. Newt Gingrich had no intention of eliminating the Department of Education. He knew that you can't use the word eliminate an education in the same sentence and think it's going to sell. So our job, I was the RINO committee, and I was a RINO on our RINO committee, Education Workforce Committee. Our job was to come up with a way to placate these family groups, as we called them then. And so we didn't have to eliminate the Department of Education. So we even told them. So I was in the meeting at the Capitol. I said, look, we can't do this. It will not fly. It's going to hurt the members that you think that, you know, that you want to protect. And you have to get buy-in from the rest of the country. So you first have to show that there's places where we can cut, you know, mm-hmm. and trim. And so we talked to them about that. We said, we have to do this program. It's going to take a couple of years. We'll promise after that, you guys will work on eliminating the Department of Education. We're like, oh, yeah, sure. You know, but the serious people in the party never had any intention of doing that. The problem is these weird little right-wing religious evangelicals, the family groups that were now a part of our coalition, got more and more seats at the table mm-hmm. over the course of the 20 years. And that's why we are where we are. We got it, the Tea Party helped bring them in, but I don't even think these are Tea Party people. This was a whole different animal mm-hmm. that came in. Mm-hmm. And people try and say, well, it goes back to Reagan. It's like, you know, first of all, it's not a good strategy to take anybody who's ever been a Republican and call them the enemy when they're on the same side as you. But it's too easy to just paint it all with that brush. There was something different happening, and I knew it. Because remember, I was a Republican. Mm-hmm. I knew what was I knew when Fox News started changing, and it was well before Trump. I was on TV like 17 years and a few more over the next, so a total of 20, a couple thousand times at Fox News a lot. Mm-hmm. And they had a point of view, and there was a market for that. But then something weird started happening. They started becoming really just lying and putting people mm-hmm. on who are sleeping with the right people. And I didn't understand why Roger Ailes was inventing these political strategists out of whole cloth when there were actual political strategists that you could have on. And then Jeff Zucker started doing it in the era of Trump with Kayleigh McEnany. And so it's just too simple to say, well, it started with Reagan or it started with Newt. There was something else, something very new and different that was injected into the system at a certain point in time. And I know this because I've already told you my age. I've been in it and around it, worked on Capitol Hill, was an RNC spokesperson, ran campaigns, I'd been a lobbyist for a while. Boat manufacturing industry. I mean, this was my life in DC for 30 years. And then in New York, spending again lots of time at all three of the cable nets. So I'm not trying to pat myself on the back, but there are very few people who have that kind of firsthand insight, right. Long-term experience, and I do. So I know the evolution of all of this.
Yeah.
And so if I start getting real nervous about something, I've learned to trust my
instincts. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, well, we're going to have to take a break, but we will be back after this message. Hey, this is Kimberly, the host of the show you're listening to right now. If you like what you're hearing, please consider becoming a patron. Just visit patreon.com/startmeup. Look at the different tiers. You can support me any way you like. I appreciate it, and thank you. Okay, we're back. All right, I'm going to ask you a fun question, but I want to start it off with, I saw you had posted earlier this year, I think it was this year, about Somebody Somewhere, and you were like, oh my God, it's like the best show ever. And so I told Bob, I'm like, we have to watch it. And it took a bit of time, but then we watched it. And oh my God, we so agree. I love that
show.
Don't
you love
so
those people?
Much.
Don't you want to hang out with them?
Yes. And I love, what did they call him? The guy.
Iceland.
Oh my God. Yeah. I love Iceland. Do you watch?
The one line. The one line of hers that I loved was I don't want to give it away for people who haven't watched it, but when he kissed her.
Yes. Okay. Yeah.
And she kind of backed away. He's like, oh, what? And she says, I don't have the emotional infrastructure for this.
I love that show. We're going to watch it again, but Iceland is also,
I've binged twice.
Yeah. I'm going to do it, but he was in Severance and he's so great. But so my question about this, because I just wanted to say, thank you for introducing, because once I saw you post about it, then I started seeing all these other people and I'm like, Bob, we have to watch that. So, what are you watching now?
Well, I did Real Time White Lotus. I followed that.
I love that. I love White Lotus.
The one episode, the one that everybody's talking about. And did you see the Saturday Night Live take? Did you see the SNL? Oh,
yes, I did.
That was fantastic when they made it about Trump. The one episode, the wild one, the one that was just, I thought, you know, everybody knows what I'm talking about. You don't even want to say what happened in it.
Yeah.
I found it gripping, of course, but I did not find it even remotely realistic. Even when you're around the weirdest, wildest, wackiest people in any corner of the planet, it just seemed like the brothers, I'm sorry, that just would never happen anywhere at any time for anyone.
Well,
it just wouldn't happen.
I'm going to do a spoiler. The thing that I didn't like about the show, and I love that show, I loved it, but the whole thing with the blender, that the father left the flour thing in the blender.
Yeah.
And then the next morning, the kid looks at all the shit in the blender and decides to make a shake without cleaning it out. Made no sense. That made no sense. They should have come up with some other way. Yeah. Maybe, but still, I mean, if you're good, look, when I was a teenager and if I wanted to make any kind of anything to eat, if there was shit in the, whether it was a blender or in the frying, I would have cleaned it. Like,
he knew it was pina coladas. He's a teenager and he wanted to drink. So
maybe,
I don't know.
Maybe that could be it. I don't know.
I can't believe that out of all the things that happened in that show, that's the one that you find not realistic. I would have cleaned the blender.
I think, I have to say one of my favorite scenes was the introductory scene to, why can I never remember the guy's name? He was talking about the lady boys. What is his name?
What?
You know, it was Walton Goggins' friend who I never can remember the guy's name.
Oh, yeah. In real life, he's married to woman who – I forget her name too.
I'll remember it in a minute.
So you didn't – that conversation –
and that was awesome.
Do you see his face?
They had an immediate – I'm looking up his name now. They had an immediate meme. I mean, it was like, and that's how we all feel while we're looking at what's happening was his face during that incredible monologue. Sam Rockwell, that's what it is. I bow to Sam Rockwell. I've always been aware.
Can you imagine doing that scene? How many times do you think he had to do that scene before he was just like, I can't, what? Are you kidding me? Without laughing.
That was
or just watching
inspired.
Watching the other guy's face while you're delivering this scene. I don't know, maybe they did several takes, but that was something.
So what else are you watching?
Oh gosh. Sometimes I just like to go by watch old episodes of like That Girl. And
oh my God. Yes. We're watching Mary Tyler
Affair.
Moore.
Yeah.
You know what is fun? I was just watching Rhoda and it was the first episode of the second season. And, Ruth Gordon was on. She remember Carlton the Doorman?
Yeah.
She played his mother. And it was like, oh my God, it's Ruth Gordon. I love Ruth Gordon. She's so cute. Okay, now I have a totally, like, I have all these random questions.
Wait,
for
I just
you.
Want to tell you, I got rid, I don't watch cable news anymore. If I need to see something,
me neither.
I
don't
on,
either.
I cancel. I was, I'm saving $40 a month. I no longer pay for Sling. I got rid of it a few months ago because I thought, first of all, I'm not sitting there watching it. And I don't want to sit there and watch it all night because, first of all, I knew too much about some of the guests that aren't actual strategists versus the ones that are. And I'm kind of, and I did it for so many years. But I've already gotten all the news before it comes on at night. Yeah. So breaking news.
Yeah, we're in it all day.
Yeah. I found there's a link online that I get. I keep getting those messages saying dangerous link, but it's free live MSNBC or CNN or Fox if you want to watch it. So if I have to, I do that. But I thought, you know what? I'm going to take that $40 a month that I'm saving on Sling and I'm going to buy gummies.
Yeah, and I haven't watched cable news since election night. I just won't do it. And part of it is, I'm not gonna blame some of these shows. Like, I don't blame Lawrence O'Donnell, and I know people have argued with me that I should, I'm gonna do what I want, but it's the CEO. He bothers me, so I won't watch it.
Yeah.
But okay, so this question is just very random. But I wrote a book. The first book I ever wrote was, I collected stories for. It's called The Virgin Diaries, and it was about first-time sex. So my question for you, one of the questions that I had in the book was, what did you hear or think you knew about sex before you had it? Like, were there any weird rumors or did you hear anything that, like, freaked you out about it that wasn't true?
It's been a really long time ago. I have to think. I was a bit of a late bloomer. And I guess, you go through this age for a few years where with my boyfriend, the high school boyfriend who was still my boyfriend from while in college, where it's like, you almost do, but you don't, you do everything bad. And then when I finally, I don't want to say what I was thinking. I just, Oh, I can't believe I'm going to say this. I didn't know that it was possible for something to go that far.
But that's the thing. We don't know.
Like once that, because it, you know, it hurt everything, but once you finally get to that point, it's like, oh wow, that's really far up there.
Well, hey, it's like
I didn't know that that all that was up there.
That's hilarious. That's like the Sex and the City episode when oh God, I can't remember his name, when Miranda was dating that sports guy, and then she broke up with him, and he said something like, "I never knew you could go that deep."
Oh,
don't you remember that?
No,
I can't remember. I can't believe you don't remember. I can't remember the guy's name.
I'll have to go binge
on
that.
The guy who was like the coach for the Knicks or whatever. Blair Underwood played him.
And he said that to her?
Yes, it was. They were on the stairwell. See, I've seen this. I've seen Sex in the City like 5 gazillion times.
How could I forget
times.
That line? Yeah.
Okay. I never knew anyone could go so deep. And he was mocking her.
Oh, okay.
But I heard what I heard was how great it was, and it was so funny because my friend told me.
Well, I knew that it was not supposed to be great the first few times, so I already knew that much.
Yeah, well, I mean, my friend told me how great it was going to be, and I kind of think I knew too. But
I mean, it's great for the guy the first time, but for the girls, I knew.
Although
it
you know,
going
it's interesting in my
and
books,
I wanted to get it out of the way.
That's what I
felt.
I
was really
right.
I was like the last girl. They were like in my dorm floor. They did like a little poll, and there's like, you know, 30 some odd girls on our floor, and only 2 of us were still the big V. And I thought, okay, now in high school, that was a big, you know, I was raised Catholic in high school and everything. That was like, oh yeah, some of, you know, we don't do. And then I got to college and it was a whole different atmosphere. And I went to a big school. I went to WVU. I'm like, oh man, I got to get rid of this thing. <You know?
laughs> Well, and because it's interesting, a lot of people who responded to my call for stories were Catholic. And
oh,
you know,
no, I can imagine what that was like.
And it was interesting because so many of the men, you know, of course, a lot of them just loved it and it was great. But then there were, I mean, there was this one guy who said, or they were younger, but this one guy said, "Is that it? That's all." And I'm like, really?
Like, I never heard guys say
I
that.
I know, but you know, sometimes, and there were a few stories where the men didn't love it. Most of the time, women didn't enjoy it because, of course, it's painful. I called
it
a
ripping
pain. It takes
a while, and you're nervous,
and you don't know what you're doing, and you're just like, it's very confusing. And
like, what if my mom finds out? Yeah.
I was lucky. My mom did tell me. It was funny. When I was 13, she sat me down. We were at El Coyote in Los Angeles, El Coyote restaurant, for those of you who know. Anyway, she's like, all right, Kimberly, you're 13. And she's so matter of fact and blunt. And she's like, you're going to start thinking about sex. And I was such a prude. And I was just like, ah. And she's like, but look, you're a teenager. Sex is going to come up. And she goes, look, I don't want to be a grandmother. I don't want you to be a teenager. And I'm a grandmother. So if you're going to have sex, don't worry about it. Just let me know. We'll go to the gynecologist. You know, we'll get birth control. And it was like, I couldn't tell my, I mean,
you're
I
13?
I couldn't be like, hey,
oh,
mom.
Wow.
Well, she didn't expect that I was going to start then, but she just wanted to prime me for
when. I was 19.
Well, I mean, I was like 16 and a half when I finally did it, but she didn't think I was going to start having sex at 13 because she knew I was such a little prude. I mean, when I say prude, I was a prude. But
well, that's what you needed to be at that age.
Yeah,
that
I mean,
was
it was
you.
That's who
There's
I was.
Enough,
and,
yeah,
yeah, and she
and
knew that about me.
It's probably a good and normal way for a 13-year-old to be. Sometimes I think our media, you know, our culture urges it along a lot sooner than we need to.
Yeah, I was always like really shy about all that stuff, and I was, and when I did decide it was time, I was ready. I had absolutely no regrets, and I never freaked out about it. It was not the most fun experience, but it was a punk rock.
But you wanted to get this show on the road.
I just wanted to get it out of the way. Just get it out of the way. Okay,
That's
let's
how
see.
I was.
all right. So, what about? Let's see. How old were you when you went on your first date?
14.
Wow. Now, what kind? Do you remember the date?
Well, we had high school dances. No, those wouldn't really be dates. I remember I was kind of starting to, we call it going with. We didn't call it dating because we were too young. I'm going with this guy. And he and an upperclassman who was actually my sister's age, my late sister's age, several years older, who was dating one of my friends, they wanted to go out on a double date. And so I had to ask my parents. And it was actually a double date to a party at the Catholic high school. We didn't go to the Catholic high school, but it wasn't really a dance. It was kind of a general party. And so I had to get permission to do this. I was 14, almost 15. So it was that kind of a thing. It was a double date. And I was 14. I was a freshman in high school, I guess. Yeah.
I don't even know when I had, I mean, I went out with somebody when I was 16, but I can't say we went out on a date, you know?
Yeah, that's how that was with me. I don't think I went on any dates until probably like real ones until I was 16.
So, right. Yeah. That's funny. All right. Let's see. Now this is completely unrelated. Have you ever experienced anything that you feel is supernatural, like a premonition or a ghost or anything like that? Anything interesting?
I used to have premonitions go through periods of time. I had a grandmother who was really kind of psychic like that too. When I was a senior in college, I had, and I would just say things matter of factly. We had like 3 weeks left to go this semester. And it was my junior year. And I just looked at my friends. I said, I don't want to go home this summer. You know, not for the usual reasons. I said, I don't want to go home this summer. I said, I just feel like there's going to be a death in my family. And I assumed it would be my dad. And 3 weeks after that, my sister was killed by a drunk driver. And she was 23, almost 24, so right before her wedding. And then the year before that, this is weird, the summer before that, when I was home, we're all sitting on the back screen porch, like before dinner or whatever. And I'm sitting on the floor. It was like that tacky green indoor outdoor carpeting that everybody had back in the day. And I was reading the paper on the floor, and my mom and my sister were talking about the wedding plans for the wedding that would be the next year, because Kathy and Dave decided to wait a year so they could both live at home and save money. And she was teaching; she was a special ed teacher, and she, you know, graduated college. And he was working managing local credit union. And so they were talking about it, just the way out this. And I just looked up and I said, "This wedding's not going to happen."
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's so
yeah,
interesting.
those two things.
That's sad,
so it's usually, and there have been a couple of others. There was a boyfriend, and we had to be long distance because he was still in college and I wasn't. And he was walking away, going to his car to leave. And I thought, I'm never going to see him again. And I didn't. He broke up with me. Yeah.
That was interesting.
There have been a couple more like that, where I just kind of, so for me, it's premonitions. I don't know if it's psychic, not ghosts or anything. I do think that people after they die hang around for a little while, and their funerals. After my sister died, I remember I woke up suddenly in the middle of the night. It was about a few weeks after she died, a month after she died, and the funeral was over. And I just had this, I just woke up thinking, Kathy, just like I felt she was there. And it felt like somebody was laying on top of me or hugging me or putting a warm blanket on me. I just felt this weight, and I was overwhelmed with the feeling of her. Mm. And the next day I told my mom that, and her eyes got real big, and the same thing had happened to her the night before. Wow. Same thing. And we think that was, they say people hang around their funerals and then they're gone. People say, oh, I feel my mother or whatever here and there. I don't know about that. I think when you're gone, you're gone. Maybe you can visit here and there, but they say you hang around for a while. And my grandmother, the psychic, she felt Kathy, because Kathy, she felt that this, oh God, I'm telling really personal things here, but my grandmother was sitting in her upstairs room, and we were so worried about my, you know, it affected my dad so much. And she was a longtime psychic and was aware that she was a psychic, as was her mother. And she could feel, sense things. And she said, Kathy was there. She felt her. It was right after she died. And she said, yes, and she felt, and so my grandmother's own hands went up to her neck. She says, Kathy, I know your neck was broken. Oh. And then the overwhelming, it was Kathy expressing extreme worry about my dad. And in the back of the closet, my grandma kept like his dog tags and different things from her boys, her four boys. And she heard a jingling. And then she went, she looked in, the dog tag was out at the front of the shelf.
Whoa.
My dad's dog tag. Yeah.
That's crazy.
And that was it.
Well, that's, it's interesting.
She felt that it was Kathy saying, please watch over dad.
Right. That's really fast. I mean, my mother has the same kind of feeling you do, that they stick around for a little while. And the reason why is my mom's father died when she was like 16 years old. Wait, hold on 1 second. Okay. My mom's father died when she was about 16 years old. And yeah, obviously that's a difficult time to lose your dad. But anyway, so she said for like a year, I think it was about a year, she would ask her father for little things, like not missing a bus, or if she was late for the bus, like, please don't let me miss the bus. Just little stuff. And every single thing for that year that she asked for, she got everything. And then she had a dream.
Maybe he got to hang around a little longer because she was so young.
Right. And then she had a dream about him like a year later where she saw him and he was coming to her, but it freaked her out in the dream. And she thought, what is this? You're dead. And he had this look on his face like he realized he scared her. And so he turned around and he left. And then that was it. Nothing ever happened again. So, I mean, you know, everybody has their own individual experiences, and that's what she takes from it, is that, you know, her father was there for a while. And then there was also with her mother, she had a dream about her mother, and then, you know, nothing else. And it's funny because I never had a dream when my maternal grandmother died, my mom's mom, I did not have any dreams. And I asked her if she would get in touch with me, if like, I'm like, when you die, if you can get a hold of me and let me know you're okay, will you do that? And she agreed to it and nothing happened. But what was interesting, I said the same thing to my paternal grandmother, and she died in September. And it was funny because the psychic girl predicted at some point, she had told me when and how both of my grandmothers were going to die. And she was right. And then she told me that my maternal grandmother was going to visit me in the form of a bird. And so, you know, I took it with a grain of salt, whatever. So then my grandma dies the way she predicted. And all these things with birds started happening. It was crazy. All these things with birds. And then it was December. And one night I was laying in bed and my cat at the time would always sleep right next to my head. So I was talking to my grandmother in my imagination. I was just like, Grammy, if you're there, you know, please let me know, do something. And I was really thinking hard about it. And I was like, just knock something off my dresser, do something. And like nothing happened. But all of a sudden, my cat like springs up and she looks at the door. And I did not think anything of it. I didn't think, oh, that's my grandmother. I just figured she heard a noise. And I still don't know why she did that. But that night I went to bed and I had this dream. And my grandmother was, her face was right in front of me, but it was kind of blurry, and she was talking, and it was almost like that teacher from Charlie Brown, like wah, 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 wah. And I woke up from that dream, and I kind of decided that it meant she was telling me, I'm here, but we just can't communicate the way we used to. And that was pretty much it. That was, you know, but I had a lot of bird situations happening, and I thought that was kind of interesting. So I've always, and then the other thing that I thought I wanted to share was, it's not me, but I had a girlfriend, I was very close with her, and her whole childhood, like all the way up into adulthood, she would have dreams that her mother and sister were killed in a car crash, and then it happened. And she, I don't know if she was alerted to it by seeing, I know she saw it on television. I guess it was a crash that had been caught on camera, but it was like she actually saw it. But I mean, that's so weird that she knew her sister and mother were going to die. She just knew it. And then they did in a car accident. So I don't know.
I don't have dreams. It's not like something tells me like this, that the premonitions that I had are just instant, that things that pop into my head and I say them.
Yeah.
It's not like it's not anything more dramatic or interesting. Right. It's just, it's there. And then after my sister died and the mom and I talked about it, I said, do you remember the year before? When I said that, I just have this feeling this wedding isn't going to happen.
Yeah.
She said, yeah, I remember that. I mean, because at the time, like, wow, Terry, you know.
Right.
Because it was just so out of the blue and, you know. So, that was pretty rough. That was pretty rough. But I don't feel that there are people visiting me or trying to send me messages. I mean, you know, my mother passed this past September, and there's a couple of times I thought, is that mom? I'm like, it's probably not. I don't want to be one of those people that reads everything into it.
Right. Yeah.
You know, it might be that we didn't have the best relationship. So I don't know. So some of these things are real. And I go online and we all do that. We look at this stuff and some of it feels a little bit like shtick, like people are just trying to get the
there's always going to be that.
Legit. Yeah.
Yeah. There's always going to be the people who
Because my situations mine are very clear. I mean, right. I have premonitions.
Yeah.
But I don't have this any kind of weird psychic.
It's not like you can call on it.
I'm gonna go sit and put my hands, a candle at a crystal ball.
Yeah, just like pops into your head. Like,
no. Yeah.
Yeah. That's what's happened to me. I've had a few things.
And I can't do anything about it. But it's usually, and unfortunately, I've had maybe 5 or 6 of these in my entire life. Haven't had any in a while. Maybe there seemed to be a period of life over the course of 10 or 15 years where it happened a lot. And it's bad stuff and there's nothing I can do about it.
Yeah.
It's usually negative stuff. I don't have premonitions about good things. Unfortunately.
The only thing that I remember when I had what I refer to as a download, and I won't get into that, but it was a knowing that something was going to happen, and it did. And it was in the backseat of my grandparents' car. But it first happened when I was 13, and I was in the backseat of my grandparents' car, and we were on the way. My stepmother was giving birth, and we didn't know, what the kid was going to be, boy or girl. And so, we're driving to the hospital, and I did just what you did. I went, "It's a boy." And the funny thing about, and it was, but the funny thing about it was I didn't even know if it was true. Like, I didn't say it's a boy. And then I knew it was a boy. I just blurted it out.
Yeah. That's how these things were with me.
But the knowing, I had a knowing that I was going to meet someone. But the weird thing about that was I had the knowing, like it popped into my awareness and I just knew it. I didn't question it. I wasn't worried. I didn't think, "Oh, what's this mean?" I just knew it, and then I forgot it until months later after it happened. And then I remembered. I'm like, "Oh my God, I had a premonition this was going to happen." But I literally forgot about it like seconds after I had it.
My premonitions. It's not like it's like, "Ooh, I feel something coming on." Right.
Yeah, you just blurted it out.
Yeah. What is it? Yeah, it's just like, "This wedding's just very..." I said, "This wedding, I have this feeling this wedding isn't going to happen next year." Yeah. Wow. And then with my friends, it's like, I don't want to go home this summer. I feel like there's going to be a death in my family. And there was.
Yeah. I mean, so random I was, and weird so this that you would say
yeah, the
that.
First, yeah. The first time, and I was 21 the first time it happened. I would have been 20 because the year before I had the premonition about there was not going to be a wedding. So the first time I remember was 20, and then what happened again at 21. And then the next time would have been at about age, let's see, when I don't even want to say what the next thing was, but I had another one of these things, and I was 26, I think, at the time of that one. And then another one when I was 38. No, I had 20, 21, then it was 23. And then there was one when I was, what did I say? 38? Yeah.
Wow. Interesting. Well,
26, 20. Yeah. Yeah. So from 26 to 38, I don't remember any.
Yeah. I mean, I haven't had anything recently. I've talked to psychics in my life. I think that, most people who say they're psychic, whether they actually believe they are or not, I went on this whole kick of calling psychics when I was younger, and I absolutely got some readings that nobody could have known, including me, that things were going to happen. It was like they pulled it out of the blue, and then they're like, "Here, this thing is going to happen," and then it happened. Most of the time, that doesn't happen in a psychic reading. But so I totally believe in it, but I just think a lot of people lie about it, or they do it just for money, and they're bullshitters. But I've had my own experiences. My mom's had experiences. I know everybody has their little stories, and
What about pet psychics? I have she rescues these dogs, and then she takes them to pet psychics so she can find out, how they were abused. And her pet psychic said, "Okay, this dog, something about her back legs. She was beaten. She was tied up in a yard, and there's a man beating her back legs, and that's why she walks like that." Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I remember there was a show. There was a pet psychic show, and I remember that it was a woman. Yeah, Sonia. And then she would like tame the alligators. Like the alligators were all angry, crocodiles, whatever. And then she would walk up, and they would all just calm down. And it was like, whoa, that was a trip. That was kind of interesting. But Yeah, I mean, it would be so good.
It's just communication. It's just communication that's not necessarily verbal. When you remember, my younger brothers were very close in age. We're only a year and a half apart. And I remember when he was 2 and I was 3, so he was nonverbal. I remember him. He had the rubber pants. It was poor Pampers. That's how old I am. Where you had the cloth diaper and then the rubber pants over it. Mm-hmm. I remember him being that, and we had this porcelain, I guess, white horse figurine in the living room, and it never should have been on a coffee table where kids could reach it. Mm-hmm. And I remember, and he couldn't talk, but I knew what he was going to do with it. Mm-hmm. And he picked it up, and I followed him because he was going to go to the front door, open the front door, and throw it on the front porch to hear it crash, because that would be really cool. And I knew he was going to do this. And I knew, oh, he'll probably get in trouble, but I followed him. I even opened the door for him. So. But how did I know that he was going to do that?
Yeah.
You know, and I sometimes think about that. So it shouldn't be so surprising.
Right. Yeah.
When look at how animals communicate with each other, they know. So it should not shock us or freak us out that sometimes we're able, because we're only using 10% of our brain anyway, that we are sometimes able to communicate like that. It's like people who are very close, they can finish each other's sentences because they know each other so well. It's somewhat related to that. But again, and little kids are like that. You hear about the twins language and stuff like that, but just siblings, because my brother and I were so close in age. I knew exactly what he was doing. I knew what was going to happen to him too afterwards. Mm-hmm. So I knew.
That with my cats. Like, I don't have cats now, but I'm pretty good. I've always been pretty good at kind of understanding what they want. Like, just by the way what they're looking at, how they're acting. I can read their little, I don't know, they're communicating with me. Obviously,
they stare at you.
Yeah.
They stare at you.
They let you know.
They're talking to you when they stare at you and they want something. They are communicating with you, and you're thinking that you're just really good at reading them. It's like, they might just be really a little bit better at communicating with you and getting you to stop and quiet your mind. Well, what they do is they stare at you and it gets you to quiet your mind so you can hear whatever it is they're trying to tell you.
Yeah.
And I found that actually gummies do that for me. I have, the reason I'm hooked on these gummies is because I have like a pusher here. Particularly with the stressful decade or so that I've had, if you do too many, I guess you get stoned, what they call it. That's why I don't do vaping. But what it does is it scrapes away that top layer of all the distractions and the anxiety.
Yeah.
And it helps me think deeper about things so I can remember things or resolve issues, because I'm able to focus and come up with solutions. I think because it just relaxes me. And I'm wondering if, it has to be kind of that same thing when you are able to, push away all of the garbage that we have in our lives. Sometimes then in your quiet moments, maybe that's why when you're asleep, some things come to you.
Right.
Because so much we're missing so much of what is probably being communicated to us. So there are some people that are just better at reading other people or animals or understand. I think for something, even if somebody's a great football coach, they're able to like think three steps ahead, three plays ahead, because there's something in them that can read that. I think that way about political strategy. Sometimes I'm really good at it. I can peer around corners. I remember thinking that about Mike Murphy back in the day. I think when he was doing the first McCain campaign, and somebody said that about him, Mike Murphy, it's like he can see around corners. And some people who are good at business or just whatever, there's so many areas of our life, maybe a good doctor in terms of trying to diagnose a patient. Yes, it's science, but there's a real element there where a doctor has to, and speaking as a person who's had the cancer and the PET scans and all that, the right doctor has to sit there and look at you, just all of you, and connect all of the dots to everything and kind of really get to know kind of how you're made and wired. I mean, we're all the same in some ways as humans, but it's individual for each person. And so they just listen differently when you're talking. Yeah. And so that's what makes a good doctor you can get the medical education, but having this illness, that's what I see that's so different.
Yeah.
So I think that it's all related then. So what we're talking about is being able to read something that's out there. Like you said, you had the grandmother, but it was like the Charlie Brown grown-up voice, the wah, wah. It was maybe harder for her to do that. Maybe she didn't particularly want to, but you were asking her. So she's, so that was, you know, and you were open to it, but just to her. Yeah. And that's why, you know, it was staticky.
It was so interesting. Well, I think this is a really good thing to end on. I just saw a meme and I'm going to read it. So it says, the real luxuries in life, time, health, a quiet mind, slow mornings, ability to travel, rest without guilt, a good night's sleep, calm and boring days, meaningful conversations, home-cooked meals, people you love, people who love you back. Perfect.
Yep, that's it.
That's what's important in life, and we just had a meaningful conversation. At least it was meaningful to me, so there's
that. It was good. Interesting. I revealed a lot of personal stuff that I've never done publicly.
See, that's like, you know, maybe I can take the show in the direction of like getting all the private stuff of people I've always talked politics with, learning their private sides. I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm trying different little things, and we'll see where this goes. But I just, first of all, I want to say thanks for coming on and chatting with me.
Oh, thanks for having me. I enjoyed
always
it.
Always fun. And then, of course, I always ask this of my guests. Please tell everyone where to find you.
Oh, yeah. Well, let's see. I have a YouTube channel now, Politics with Sherry Jacobus. Also on Patreon, my podcast is also called Politics with Sherry Jacobus. And I'm on Twitter and Blue Sky at Sherry Jacobus. And one of these days, once I get this move underway and settled down, I'm going to start writing on Substack. So we'll start.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you have to. Everyone is.
I mean, I have a Substack and I have all these people that have signed up and I haven't put anything up. Yeah, the technology trips me up. The content I'm great at, but I have, you know, people helping me here and there. But I get tripped up on technology.
Yeah. So. Well, it's understandable. Sometimes so do I. But all right, cool. I am putting your information, at least your Blue Sky link, into the show description. So thanks again. It was awesome talking
to you.
Thank you.
Great.
All right.
Thanks.
I will talk to you later. Take care. Bye-bye.
Months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/listen. That's forhers.com/listen. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
It's no surprise that newsmakers try to manipulate the audience. They want you to believe that they are the one holding the line and they'll use any trick they can to get you there. But don't let them fool you. Get unspun. I'm Amanda Sturgill. I've been a reporter, and today I teach future reporters to cut the spin and think critically about what newsmakers say. My podcast, Unspun, shows you how to know when you're being manipulated by the news. Learn to spot the tricks and how to make up your own mind about what's true. So if you're tired of being fooled by the news, subscribe to Unspun today. Unspun, because you deserve the truth.